This information is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with regard to the subject matter covered. It is offered with the understanding that the presenters are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If legal advice or other expert advice is required, the services of a competent professional should be sought.
Welcome to the Odessa Real Estate Investing and Real Estate Financial Planning Podcast. Learn all about investing in real estate in Odessa, Texas, with a combination of real estate financial planning and modeling with numbers specific to Odessa. Plus syndicated, more generalized recordings of live and pre-recorded real estate investing classes. Not all of them specific to Odessa. Be sure to stay tuned after the podcast for a message from our sponsors.
Well, good morning and welcome, everyone. I'm your host, James Orr, and this is another module in the Real Estate Investing Secrets course. Today, we're going over the sleeper hit, the kind of like unexpected, amazing class that you didn't know you wanted, but once you've gone through it, you will be very surprised. It is the Secrets of Capital Expenses. And we're going to go into a lot of detail on capital expenses. I've got some pretty unusual, pretty unique thoughts on this stuff and some great tools for you to help you figure out your capital expenses and for ways for you to think about it. So capital expenses are, in some ways, the silent killer of a lot of real estate investing folks, a lot of real estate investing returns, a lot of real estate investing deals. So we're going to go into a lot of detail. We're going to look at that today. So capital expenses versus maintenance. So talk to your CPA to verify what I'm about to tell you. But you can also reference the Internal Revenue Code, the IRC, Section 162, in order to get clarification and go right to the source of whether something is considered a capital expense or whether it's considered maintenance on your property. But a safe harbor provision of the IRS allows you to write off expenses under $2,500 in the year that you take it. So any expenses that you have under $2,500, you can write it off as a one-time expense there. You don't have to kind of spread it out over whatever the lifespan of the item that you're replacing is. And this is, my understanding, it is per invoice or item. So if it's like, you know, spread out over a whole bunch of different ones, you could do those individually. But if it's like one big receipt for $14,000, you're not going to be able to expense that all in one year. So per invoice or item, up from $500 prior to January 1st, 2016. So this is I guess it's 8 years old at this point, but it's a pretty significant change in that. And you do not need to capitalize the expense over time, which is the big advantage. You can write off that one expense up to $2,500 in that year. Those with audited financial statements, the limit is $5,000, not $2,500. So you will know if you have audited financial statements because you're going to pay for it. But if you are doing that, you can go up to $5,000. Otherwise, it's going to be $2,500 for your. And again, verify this with your CPA. I'm not a tax expert, even though we're going to do class on taxes and how to save money on taxes and stuff like that for real estate investors. This is not my area of specialty. It's not my area of expertise. I'm not trained on this. So verify everything I'm telling you in regard to taxes to make sure that you're doing it right for your stuff. And as I double down on the tax information here, so this is some quotes from the IRS about whether something is a qualified business. There are certain advantages you get by having a qualified business with the IRS as a real estate investor. And so if you can qualify for this, you should, I think, although talk to your CPA to verify, but you'll want to go ahead and verify that you are a qualified business. And in order to do that, this is what you need. We're going to read you some of the things I got from the IRS website. So you need to have separate books and records that are maintained to reflect income and expenses for each rental real estate enterprise. And you can, my CPA has me group all of mine together into one entity, although you can separate them out into individual ones. But the requirements then are that you need to do these things for each of them. And there's going to be a number of hours you need to do and keep contemporaneous logs of what you do for each one. And it's really hard to do that per property unless the properties have to be very large. You're very actively involved, which probably don't want to be that actively involved. So my CPA has me group all mine together as one entity, which has some pros and cons. So you'll want to discuss that with your own tax advisor to make sure you understand what you're getting into before you do that. So for taxable years beginning prior to January 1st, 2023, 250 or more hours of rental services are performed as described in this revenue procedure per year with respect to the rental enterprise. So you have to put in 250 hours of work on your rental property businesses in order to qualify as a qualified business and get this special tax treatment. For taxable years beginning after December 31st, 2022, in any three of the five consecutive taxable years that end with the taxable year, or in each year for an enterprise held for less than 5 years, 250 or more hours of rental services are performed, as described in this revenue procedure, per year with respect to the rental real estate enterprise. And the taxpayer maintains contemporaneous records. Contemporaneous means as you do them. You cannot wait to the end of the year and then go back and say, well, I think I did about 10 hours on this day. And, you know, I think I did about, oh, it had to have been at least 20 hours doing work on that month. And then, you know, I did about 15 hours here and there for that. And, you know, overall, over the course of the entire year, you know, 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there, 15 minutes there. You know, I probably did another 40 hours worth of stuff on this rental property, just reviewing things and, you know, thinking about stuff and that stuff. That is not acceptable. You need to keep contemporaneous records. As you do stuff, you need to write it down and log what you did, how much time you spent, and like keep receipts and all that other stuff. That's what contemporaneous means, and they're pretty serious about that. So taxpayer maintains contemporaneous records, including time reports, logs, or similar document regarding the following. Number one, the hours of all services performed. Two, a description of all services performed. Three, dates on which such services were performed. And four, who performed the services. Such 8 records are to be made available for inspection at the request of the IRS. So if you don't get audited, may not be a big deal. But if you get audited, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. You may not be able to get this qualified business thing. And they may want you to go back and look at other ones if they catch you in 1 year. So I would definitely keep these logs as you go. And I'll give you a form here in a second in order to be able to do that. The contemporaneous records requirement will not apply to taxable years beginning prior to January 1st, 2019. So anything prior to that, you don't need to have that stuff, which is good news because you probably weren't keeping contemporaneous records at that point. But if you are doing that, you're going to want to do it now. So if you want to have a qualified business income log in order to do it, you can do it anywhere. You can do it on a sheet of paper. Just, you know, keep it organized and neat and make sure you have good records and you do it as you do stuff. So to qualify for this safe harbor, you must keep contemporaneous logs. Any log will do, but if you want to download our simple one, the spreadsheet just shows you exactly what we did, made a spreadsheet with date, what it was and who did it, and then the hours that you did it, and it sums up the hours on the bottom. You could do a new one for each year. Make sure that you've got 250 hours in there, and you can go download a copy of that log. I'll put a link there, links on the screen, or I'll put it in the show notes or whatever we're doing there so that you can go access all those logs and download it to do it yourself. Okay, that being said, traditional maintenance versus capital expenses. You know, what's the difference between, you know, maintenance and what a capital expense is? So maintenance is usually stuff like small turnover expenses. For example, wear and tear that can't be billed back to the tenant. Any type of things that you need to replace or fix or repair on a property are usually considered maintenance on the property. Repairs to items that break are also considered maintenance items. So any service calls you make to plumbers, or a little small repair on a roof, or the HVAC guy comes out and does some work on your heating system or your air conditioning system or something like that, or there's an electrical issue, you need to have an electrician come out and fix something, or you have a handyman go out and repair something on the property, or landscapers do something to maintain the property that way, or any related supplies to all of those things. That tends to be maintenance on a property. Capital expenses, on the other hand, are usually improvements to the property over time. Things like replacing a roof, or the gutters on a property, or replacing the air conditioning unit completely, or replacing the furnace or the boiler, or completely remodeling a kitchen or remodeling a bathroom, or replacing windows on a property when the windows no longer work, or replacing a driveway, or replacing appliances in the property, or replacing a water heater, or doing like things like exterior paint where you're painting the entire exterior of the house. Those types of things tend to be more on the capital expense. There is a little bit of a blurry line in some cases, but for the most part, like things that are physically improving the property or replacing major functional components of property, those tend to be capital expenses. Maintenance items to maintain things, fixing things, things like that, those tend to be considered maintenance. So there are 2 separate sections on the world's greatest real estate deal analysis spreadsheet for you to be able to enter in different numbers for maintenance and different numbers for capital expenses. And we calculate them differently. And one of the reasons we do this is some people like to think of them as either a percentage, or some people like to think them as a dollar amount. So you can, and probably should in a lot of ways, separate them out on the world's greatest deal analysis spreadsheet. There are 2 different lines there. I've circled them on the image here. This is the input section, but there's a spot here for you to put how much percentage that you have of the, I think it's a percentage of gross operating income that you are doing for maintenance, and then what dollar amount you're setting aside each year for capital improvements on the property, like roofs and replacing windows and replacing driveways eventually when the driveway goes. So you could choose to think of them together for deal analysis, You could decide, hey, look, I'm just going to have a really high percentage for maintenance, and that's going to cover me through all of it. Or I can have a really, really high number for CapEx. The calculations are all going to be the same because they count them as part of your expenses on there. But if you want to separate them out, you can, and you probably should separate them out because they are a little bit different. So maintenance, though, is a percentage of the gross income coming in. So as your income on the property, as the rents go up on the property, you know, minus your vacancy on it, as that kind of increases, the amount you're setting aside for maintenance also increases as well. So that's sort of automatically adjusting. CapEx, you put a dollar amount a year, and then it automatically adjusts up with the CapEx appreciation rate, which is available for you in the overrides tab. So if you click on the overrides, you can adjust whatever the CapEx appreciation rate is so that that increases each year as well. And it can increase at a different rate. For example, you could have it be, you know, the same for the next couple of years. And then after that, have it go up by, you know, 5% a year. That's what the appreciation rate is going to be for capital expenses. And we're going to talk a lot about that. The idea behind it is, you know, a roof today might cost you whatever, you know, $12,000 as an example. It could be a lot more than that, could be a lot less than that in your marketplace, depending on your property. But it could cost you $12,000. But a roof 20 years from now is not still going to be $12,000. We know that. We know that things are getting more expensive. Now, it's possible we could come out with some new technology where the roof cost goes way down. It could be a lot cheaper to do a roof, but that's probably not likely. So it's probably going to be increasing with the cost of goods, with like, which is what inflation is. So, you know, if we think about a $12,000 roof today, 20 years from now, that roof may be a $24,000 roof. And so to save up thinking that you're going to have a $12,000 expense is not going to be the same as saving up knowing that 20 years from now, when you need to replace that roof, it's going to be $24,000. So you need to be saving today as if you're saving for a $24,000 purchase, not a $12,000 purchase. And that's why we have that CapEx appreciation rate, so that the capital expenses increase over time when we're planning for stuff like that. Okay. So paint and carpet and flooring. You know, like, how do we think about those? Is repainting the interior and replacing the carpet or flooring maintenance on a property, or is that a capital expense? Some real estate investors are going to include paint and carpet and flooring as a maintenance expense on their deal analysis. You know, when they're going and looking at their deal analysis, they're going to say to themselves, okay, you know, I'm buying this property. I probably will have to replace the carpet this frequently. This is what I think carpet's going to cost me. I need to repaint the property every X number of turns on a tenant. And so I'm probably going to need to do it this much. This is how much it costs me to do that. And they're going to calculate how much they should have as their percentage for maintenance on the property when they do their deal analysis. Now, an important note, including paint and carpet as a maintenance expense can result in you having an abnormally large maintenance percentage. So a lot of you guys are going to go online, you're going to read about, you know, what should I use for maintenance when I'm analyzing a deal? And you're going to see stuff all over the place. You know, you're going to see people saying, you know, it's 4% or it's 6% or it's 10% or it's 12%, it's 15%, it's 20%. You're going to see all these different numbers. And I'm telling you, you cannot use what everyone else online is using. You need to do some calculations yourself. You need to understand the property you're buying, the price points, and what things cost, and then actually do some calculations to determine what is going to be reasonable for that. And I'm going to show you the math for that today. That's one of the reasons why this class is going to be pretty interesting, is that you're actually going to see how we come up with the idea for a maintenance number, what percentage you use, and what we should use for our CapEx numbers. I've got spreadsheets on how to do it. All right. So the impact of the price and rent ratio on what maintenance percentage you use. So let's do a little thought experiment here. Let's do a little assumption. Let's assume that your tenant turns over every 2 to 3 years. You know, a typical tenant for you and your typical property stays there for 2 to 3 years. And let's just use 2.5 to kind of be in the middle there. I realize that some of you are going to have properties, you're like, man, I wish my tenant stayed for 3 years. And other people are going to be like, 3 years, man, if my tenant's not staying 5 years or more, then I'm doing something wrong. I get it. I understand there's a lot of variation in this, but let's just go through this example so you understand what I'm doing, and then you can do it for whatever numbers make sense for you. So let's use 2.5 years for how long a typical tenant stays in your property. So you're going to turn over your property every 2.5 years. And when you turn over a property, you're going to replace the paint, carpet, flooring every 2 turns. Every 2 times you have a tenant. So you're going to have one tenant go in there. They're going to live there with the same paint and carpet and flooring. And then after the next tenant comes in there, you're going to replace the carpet, paint and stuff like that. So every 5 years, you end up replacing the carpet in a property and you're going to repaint the property. So that's your kind of like rule of thumb for doing this. Is that realistic? I think you need to do your own math and see what your own properties do. And some properties, it's probably going to be more frequently than that. You're going to have some tenants that are really, really rough on your properties, and you're going to need to do it a lot more frequently. Or you're going to find out that it's going to go a lot longer. You'll be able to, you know, get, you know, 4 turns out of a property before you need to paint it or whatever. So it's going to vary quite a bit, but we're going to use this for now, and I'm going to show you what we do there. So then you go to a big box store, you know, one of these kind of like retail handyman sort of stores that sell all sorts of home supplies and stuff like that. And you're going to price out the most basic, the least expensive paint and carpet. So you're going to find out what would it cost to have someone come in and paint the property for you, and what would it cost to have someone come in and replace the carpet and flooring on the entire property for you. And what you come up with is, just go along for the sake of the example here, it's $2 a square foot to have the property painted inside, and it's going to be $3 a square foot to have your carpet and flooring redone for the entire property. That is your kind of like cost to do that. So for a 1,600 square foot, three-bedroom property, the expense to paint and carpet every 5 years is going to be $2 per square foot times 1,600 square feet equals $3,200 in paint in order to paint the property every 5 years. And then carpet and flooring, we're saying it's $3 a square foot for that times 1,600 square feet equals $4,800 every 5 years in order to re-carpet the property. So the total every 5 years, not including any other maintenance or anything like that, but the total every 5 years is going to be $8,000. $3,200 plus $4,800, you add those together, you get $8,000. Or, and that's over 5 years. So that works out to be about $1,600 per year for you to save up to be able to have enough money to do painting of the interior and carpeting or recarpeting or reflooring of the interior of your property every 5 years. So you got to be saving up $1,600 per year in order to do that. And since it's the most basic and the least expensive, that's $1,600 per year, whether you're owning a $100,000 property and getting like $1,000 a month, or you have a $500,000 property and you're getting $2,500 a month. And some would argue you probably have a little bit more expensive, like carpet at least, in a property that is $500,000. Although I've seen a lot of people do really basic entry-level carpet that looks nice in like a $500,000 property as well. But it doesn't matter. What I'm trying to point out is, because this is the least expensive, most basic version of this, it doesn't matter if you've got a like $100,000 property or $500,000 property, that's the expense. It's $1,600 per year in order to save up for that. So what does that mean in terms of like what we should use for a maintenance number on a property? Well, if you've got a $100,000 property getting $1,000 a month, your gross operating income, that calculation we do in the spreadsheet for you automatically, is we take the amount of income you're getting per year gross, that $12,000, $1,000 a month times 12, and we subtract out a vacancy allowance, which I've said is 3% for both of these. So your gross operating income is $11,640. That's what you expect to bring in from this property. And you've got $1,600 per year just for that basic, least expensive paint and carpet flooring stuff on the property. So what percentage should we be using for maintenance if we just want to cover the basic paint and carpet for a property over a five-year period? Well, $1,600, which is the expense we need to save each year, divided by $11,640. That means that we need to use 13.75% as the maintenance number when we do deal analysis on this property, assuming we have no other repairs, which is unrealistic, okay? That's just for paint and flooring every two turns. It does not include any other maintenance. The plumber calls, the handyman calls, any other stuff we've got going on there. That's just paint and carpet, okay? And that's 13.75% on a $100,000 property. But if we had the same paint and carpet on a $500,000 property where we're getting $2,500 a month in rent, the gross operating income for that is now $30,000 per year, $2,500 a month times 12, minus a 3% vacancy, which is $29,100. Now that same $1,600 per year expense for the basic, least expensive paint and carpet is going to be divided by that $29,100. And now we come up with a 5.5% maintenance number on that property. It's the same expense. We're talking about buying the same paint and carpet, but now because we have one property that's a lot less expensive and has a lot lower rent versus another property that's much more expensive and has a lot higher rent, the maintenance percentage changes drastically. It goes from 13.75 to 5.5, which is why you can't just go online and ask somebody what your maintenance is on a property or what do you use for maintenance when analyzing a deal. It doesn't matter. You need to do your own calculation and say, okay, you know, I'm probably going to have some miscellaneous expenses here. I'm going to have a plumber call every so often. I'm going to have a handyman coming in. So I probably need to have, you know, whatever it is, 15 to 20% for maintenance on these lower cost properties. And on the higher ones, I'm going to probably have, you know, probably 7 or 8% or whatever it is, because those are going to be different price properties and the percentages change. Okay. And again, these numbers did not include the 13.75 and the 5.5 did not include any other maintenance. That's why those numbers are there as like minimums. Okay. And of course, do your own calculations. If you're doing your turns are, they're much longer on the turns and you think you can get a longer lifespan on the paint and carpet on the property, then you could change your numbers and have that be reflected in that. So go ahead and do whatever the math is for you. And those numbers will obviously change based on that. Okay. So we're not just talking about paint and carpeting. There may be some regional differences in prices and wages as well. But for similar size properties, often the price for the following are not significantly different. So if you've got a 1,600 square foot property, it doesn't matter if it's a $100,000 property or $500,000 property. The roof for that type of property is probably going to be really similarly priced. And the same thing with water heaters. Doesn't matter if you're a $100,000 property or a $500,000 property. The water heaters are usually about the same cost. And windows are very similar as well. And the hourly wages for trade, you know, what it costs to get a plumber out to a $100,000 property versus what it costs to get a plumber out to a $500,000 property are usually very, very similar. Or the HVAC tech, or the electrician, or the handyman. My point is that it doesn't matter what the price of the property is. Some of these expenses are going to be the same or very, very similar regardless of what that is there. Such that buying a low-priced property, for example, $100,000 property, will often have a very high percentage of gross operating income for maintenance and CapEx compared to a similar square footage property in a more expensive market, for example, a $400,000 or $500,000 property. And that is why you must do your own due diligence and do your own analysis in order to calculate this out. So what you should do is, and I got a little spreadsheet you're going to be able to download. I'll put it in the show notes for you to be able to go download. You should do your own research to find out how much it might cost you to replace a roof in your marketplace and how long that roof will last for. And then do this for all of the other capital expense things that you're going to have going on and any other maintenance stuff that you've got going on. So you want to go and say, okay, I know I'm going to have to do a roof at some point. I know at some point, and maybe a long time, I may need to do a kitchen remodel. And I know at some point the windows are going to need to be replaced in a property because that's just happened. I know at some point the AC is going to stop working. I'm not going to be able to repair it cost efficiently. And so I'm going to need to go buy a new AC unit. I'm either going to do the same thing with a furnace or other heat source like a boiler. I'm going to need to paint the exterior of the property. I'm going to need to remodel the bathroom. I'm going to need to do interior paints on the property. I'm going to need to do carpeted flooring. I'm going to need to do appliances, gutters, landscaping, electrical fixtures, plumbing on the property, the water heater, like all of these things and anything else you want to list. You're going to need to go research that and say, how much would it cost me in today's dollars, rough estimate, and how long do I expect this thing to last for? Okay. So you could say to yourself, hey, a roof, I don't know, in my marketplace, roofs typically last around 20 years. So I'm going to use 20 years for my kind of like saving period for a roof. Okay. And these numbers are very rough estimates, right? But you can't just kind of like use my rough estimates as your own. You need to go and adjust them for your marketplace and your property. Okay. Longevity also changes based on location. So in some markets, roofs last a lot shorter because the weather is rough and you're likely to have, you know, things happen to roofs. And in other markets, roofs can last a much longer period of time, especially if you're doing certain types of roofs that have much longer lifespan. So realize that these things can vary. You can't use like a standard one. I can't just give you a template and say, hey, use these numbers. These are always going to be right. You need to adjust them for your own stuff. Okay. Now you may also be able to get discounts if you like have a connection to, you know, your brother's an electrician, your father's in the roofing business, whatever it is there, you may be able to get discounts and you may also be able to do some things yourself. Although remember from the asset protection module where we talked about the dangers and the risks of doing these things yourself. I showed you a proxy for like what the risk measured is in terms of the premium you have to pay in insurance. And remember, the premium for doing this work is really, really high. So if you're doing it yourself and you don't have insurance to cover yourself for the repairs you're doing, you're taking on additional liability, which may be short-sighted. So go watch the asset protection module to understand what we talked about with that as to why I would recommend that you may not want to do the work yourself, even if you could do the work yourself, okay? So this is sort of the rough spreadsheet, which we'll go over here in a minute. So maintenance and capital expenses. So really you have three options. If you think about the maintenance items and the capital expense options, number one is you can ignore them. You can put your head in the sand. You can plead ignorance. You know, ignorance is bliss. You could do deal analysis, but your deal analysis with fake numbers, just where you make up numbers, you throw something in there. I'm going to just use 10% for maintenance. That seems reasonable, right? Maybe you happen to get really, really lucky, but your deal analysis then becomes fantasy land. It doesn't matter what your cash on cash return calculation is or what your return on investment looks like or how the deal has performed if you just made up numbers for maintenance and capital expenses on a property, because it's not reality. You know, if you say, well, maintenance is going to be zero, I'm going to assume that the property is going to be in perfect condition forever. Well, it doesn't matter what your return on investment number is because you just made up numbers for kind of like maintenance on a property. So you need to use realistic numbers in order to do that. So option number one is you can ignore it. Option number two is you can do basic planning. You can estimate costs and you can determine an average amount you need to save each year. And this is essentially what our basic spreadsheet does. It allows you to go in and list all the different items on there. It allows you to put in, you know, how much it's going to cost you and then what the frequency you'll need to repair something is. And it does some really basic calculations. It says, okay, you're going to need to save up about this much per month or about this much per year for maintenance on your property. And that should cover you. Okay. Or you could do advanced planning. This is sort of like cash flow planning for your expenses where you know that certain years you're going to have really low maintenance. Like if you buy a brand new property that first year that you own it, you're probably not replacing any roofs. You're probably not doing any water heaters. You're probably not doing any kitchens or bathroom remodels. You're not doing any windows because it's a brand new property and it's probably under warranty. So you know that for that first year, it's probably zero. But you know, year 15, you might have a lot of expenses all peak right there because everything now is 15 years old. And you might have a year where there's a lot of repairs on the property. And so you need to have saved up a lot of money, not just like one or two things happen. And these things don't happen exactly spread out. Like you'll see that they cluster, okay? So cash flow planning for your expenses, you can know what your upcoming expenses are, when they'll happen, and you can budget for them. You can say, look, I know that in 20 years I'm going to need a new roof, and it's going to cost, you know, twice as much as it does today. So I can go ahead and plan for that and for windows and for, you know, kitchens and bathrooms and driveways and landscaping and painting and all that other stuff. Okay. That's what our advanced spreadsheet does. If you think of this as a kind of like an analogy to parenting expenses, you know, there's the normal operating stuff you have for parenting. You know, you need to put food on the table. You need to kind of like, pay for electricity. You need to pay for utilities. You need to pay for all that stuff that you've got for your kids. But also, if you have kids, there's a good chance your kids are going to need braces. And so you're going to need to start budgeting for that today when you're going to pay for braces. You know that they're going to want to go to sport camps over the summer. You know that they're going to want to take music lessons. You know that they're going to need a car at some point, you know, when they get their driver's license and they want to transport themselves. You know that they're going to need college entrance exam tutoring. You know that they're going to need college costs if you plan on paying for college for your kids, like tuition and room and board. And you're going to need help with their first down payment on their rental property or their first down payment with the house that they buy. You know that they're going to have a wedding and they're going to need some money for that. You know that they're going to need help after there's a divorce or a job loss. You know that, you know, they're not going to have the savings or as robust of savings as you. And so if they have a life setback, you may need to step in and contribute to that. And you know you're going to need to be setting aside money for these things, like your property maintenance and your capital expenses. So if you've got kids, you know that these expenses are coming. You should be setting aside money or at least buffering up a really big, robust savings account to be able to deal with this. Just like that, you need to be doing this and thinking about this for your properties. Okay, so here's the basic spreadsheet. And I will give you access to this. You know, I'll give you a link for the people that have paid for this course. So maintenance and CapEx estimator for rental property, basic. This is what it does. It shows you on here, you know, what the different expenses are, and you have room to add more. Basically, all the yellow areas, the manila areas, are things you can add in here. Then they put in the cost for a roof in today's value, and then how frequently you plan on replacing this in years. So you can go through and see, like, how long we're estimating. Again, you need to do your own calculations for these, your own estimates. And then we have an inflation rate because we want to figure out like how much a roof is going to cost 20 years from now. So we need to use the inflation rate. So we do $12,000 20 years in the future at 3% inflation rate. The replacement cost in 20 years is going to be $21,673. The yearly cost, if we were to save that for the 20-year time period, is going to be $1,083.67 per year in order to save up for a roof in 20 years from now. That's about $90 a month. And we do the same thing for all of the different capital expenses and improvements we're going to make on the property and how frequently they are going to be. So like, for example, this interior paint might be $3,500 every 5 years. And so we're going to say your replacement cost in 5 years from now is going to be about $4,057. You need to save up $811.49 per year or about $67.62 per month. It adds all these up and shows you the amount you need to be saving monthly and the amount you need to be saving yearly in order to make sure that you're going to have money for doing these things. And we're assuming that all of these things were brand new when you bought the property. So that this $12,000 roof that's going to be 20 years in the future, that the roof was brand new when you bought it, which we know is not reality, which is what we're going to get to when we talk about the advanced spreadsheet. Okay? So this is what the basic spreadsheet does. It allows you to do that and tells you where these numbers are. The basic instructions. So here's how you do it. You research and you enter in the cost in today's dollars for each of the expenses. And if you need to add additional ones because your property has stuff, go ahead and do that. And then the lifespan or the frequency in years for replacing that item. whatever time period you're going to do that at. And then you include any custom expenses down here, enter in your inflation rate up here, whatever you think, you know, the cost of things are going to go up. If you believe we're going to be in a really high inflation environment, you can use a slightly higher number. It will also be more conservative. Or if you think that inflation is going to become more tame, the Fed says that their target inflation rate is 2% per year. We've actually seen it be more like 3% historically. So use whatever number you'd like to use there. I think 3% is a much more reasonable conservative number. Better for you to have a little bit of extra money and be prepared for something than to have less money and then be short and have to struggle to maintain your property and keep up with the expenses on it. Then you use the yearly costs or monthly costs in your analysis and spreadsheet under CapEx. So you'd put in this annual cost in the world's greatest real estate deal analysis spreadsheet under your yearly cost for CapEx. And this is why I will tell you, CapEx is the silent killer, because all of a sudden you start adding in these expenses for maintaining your property over time, and you're like, this no longer looks like a deal. I didn't think it was going to cost me X number of dollars per year in order to maintain this property. But a lot of other investors, they just kind of like pretended zero or very close to zero. They analyze their deals, and then when they find out they've got a $14,000 roof expense, they're like, holy crap, I didn't have $14,000 set aside for a roof. Now I got to figure out where it's coming from. And then, you know, that same year, they find out that their air conditioning goes and they need to come up with, you know, $5,000 for an air conditioning. So there's some issues with not doing it, but that's why these numbers can tend to make them a lot worse. So you really need to take this into account. Okay, and then use the inflation rate for your CapEx appreciation rate in the overrides tab when you enter it in on the world's greatest real estate deal analysis spreadsheet when you're doing that. Okay, so that's the basic spreadsheet. But what are the shortcomings of the basic spreadsheet? Well, what if you're buying a property where everything is not new and at the beginning of their life cycle, like a resale property that has some deferred or upcoming maintenance? You know, you buy a 10-year-old property that only has 10 years left on its roof. You don't have 20 years to save for a roof. You only have 10 years now to save for a replacement roof. And what if certain items will increase in price faster than others? What if the cost of asphalt roofs are going up a lot faster than just the normal inflation rate? What if they're going up at 5% a year? Or what if they're going up less than 5% a year? What if they're going up slower than inflation? You know, different inflation or different items. And like, let's say, you know, roofs are going up in price faster, but paint is coming down. Paint has become a lot cheaper. And so those things can be different in the advanced versus spreadsheet. Now, what if you're starting with some money set aside for known repairs? What if you're like, look, I'm buying this property. As part of my negotiation, I know that the roof was near the end of life. The inspector said you probably only got about 2 years left on it. So I'm going to go ahead and be prudent about making my investment. I'm going to go ahead and set aside money for a new roof now as part of my rent-ready costs in my deal analysis, because I know that I've got a new roof coming and I know that I'm going to have that money set aside. So I'm just going to go ahead and do it at the beginning. So if you're setting some money aside now, knowing that you've got a repair that's imminent, that is like really, really close and very large, you can go ahead and set aside money up front. And what if you're earning a return on the money you have set aside for expense? What if you've got, you know, this $20,000 capital expense account and you've been really, really lucky, the tenant's been there in a long time and there hasn't been anything that's broken in the property, and fingers crossed, you've got a little bit more time, but while you're waiting, you've got this 20 grand sitting somewhere that needs to be earning something. So you've got to invest in something. Now you can actually have that money invested somewhere and we can calculate what you're earning on it each year as well. And what if you're going to increase how much you're saving each year as rents go up? You're like, look, I'm buying a new construction property. Everything's brand new. I plan on significantly increasing what I'm saving. But at the beginning, I'm really, really tight on cash flow. I'm going to actually save a little bit less in the first few years. And I know that I probably can because I got a warranty the first year or two. And I probably have everything is brand new and not likely to be replaced. But then as I get improved cash flow, I'm going to increase it so that I'm saving even more than I should have. So I want to do an irregular savings amount. Maybe I'm saving, you know, $100 a month at first, but then as cash flow increases by $100, now I'm saving $200, and then I'm saving $300, saving $400. And so you kind of increase these numbers over time much more rapidly than just normal inflation increases. Well, for all of these reasons is why I created the advanced version of the deal amount of the capital expense spreadsheet, okay? And so here's what the advanced version looks like. In this one, you do a similar thing. You have all the different capital expenses you've got here. You put in the cost in today's dollars and you put in the frequency that you're going to replace them. This is the same as what we just did in the basic. However, now you've got another column which says, what is the age of the item that you're talking about at the start? So if you've got a roof that's, you know, you're replacing every 20 years, what if that roof is 10 years old? Well, now you can put in a 10 and now it shows you that you only have 10 years to save up for a new roof. Okay. And what if your windows are already 11 years old and you plan on replacing them every 15 years? Well, now you only have 4 years to save up for new windows. Okay. So it allows you to go put in the age of whatever item it is here at the start, and it will do some additional calculations. In addition to that, you can put in a starting amount that you're starting with. If you know that you only got 2 years left to save for a roof, maybe you should set aside about $12,000 now. So you put in $12,000 as your starting balance. That way you won't have to have this abnormally large dollar amount that you're saving up for a roof in 2 years. You're not having to save $6,000 a year for a roof, right? Because you put $12,000 to start with. And then I'll show you the monthly amount here, do the calculation. And then what is the rate of return you're earning on the money you've got set aside for these capital expenses? And it does those calculations. But not only does it do like those types of things, it sort of like plans out your cash flow for you and tells you, are you going to be hit with a situation where you're likely to run out of money, where the amount you had saved up for capital expenses is not enough and you're going to need to come out of pocket or find the money somewhere else? And it also shows you where all of the different expenses happen and how they cluster, and then what the total amount of expenses are for any given year, which we're going to go over here in detail, okay? Plus, there's overrides. So remember before we talked about this idea that, you know, what if roofs go up in price faster than windows or something like that? So roofs here, you can set an individual inflation rate for what roofs are going to increase value. Everything's set to 3% as the default, but you could come in here and change that to be whatever you want. You say roofs are going to go up 1% a year, or roofs are going to go up 6% a year, or 10% a year, whatever you want to do there. And you could override the roof cost. You could say, you know, I just figured out that roofs are going to get really, really expensive 4 years from now when this new tax bill comes in or this new law passes, and they're going to charge a special tax on any roofing materials or whatever it is. So you can go ahead and adjust that. And you can adjust what the roof age is. So if you have a storm and it shortens the lifespan of your roof, you can go ahead and change that. Or the roof frequency. Say, look, you know, now my roofs are, you know, they're only 20 years right now, but eventually I'm going to have roofs that last me 25 years because the quality is going to get better. You could change all these things. So whether you replace the roof and then how much you spent. So each one, each item, roof, kitchen remodel, all those things has these independent overrides for each year. So you can go calculate whatever you want to do and do those calculations. So here's how you do the overrides. You could change any expense individually for each year. You could change the inflation rate. You could change what it costs. You could change the current age of it, the lifespan, how frequently you replace it, when you had the expense, and how much you spent on that expense in order to do it. And in addition to that, you have overrides for your expense account, the account you're using to save up the money there. You could change for any year how much to increase the amount you're saving by. So how much you're increasing the amount you're saving to keep up with inflation. The amount that you're saving, you can change that. The yearly rate of return for your account that you're storing the expense money in. Maybe you're only earning 2% per year now, but you expect that to increase to 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 or whatever it is. And then the balance any given year or the deficit in any given year. So how much money you have in surplus that you're sitting waiting to spend it on the things you know are coming up. Or if you're short something, it'll show you how short you are. And you can see the most expensive year, how much your biggest year for expenses was, and what your largest deficit, what the lowest balance it ever was over the entire period for that property. You could see all that as well on the thing. So for each expense, it shows up on this capital expense magnitude frequency chart as how much it was for each one as an individual line item. And so you can see in year six, we had two expenses. One was a little less than $5,000. One was about $5,000. In year eight, we had another one, which is about $3,000. In year, whatever this is, 11, looks like we had 5 different expenses on here. Some of them over $5,000, some of them about $5,000, some of them about $1,000. And then you can see like how frequently and how many of these are. You can see at a glance when these things are going to happen. And then the next chart shows you like these summed up. So instead of having them kind of like side by side, show you the two different ones, we just stack them on top of each other so that you can see the total amount you had to spend. And you can see what your worst, your ugliest year is. So in year 31, you've got almost $100,000 worth of capital expenses all coming due at the same time on this property. Sure, that's an inflated dollars, about three times as much as it is today at a 3% inflation rate. So it's really only about $33,000, but a $33,000 expense is significant on a property. And that's just because all those things happen. Now, is it possible that your roof lasts an extra year or two and the one of these things gets moved out to year 33? Sure. Is it possible that your windows get moved up because something happens to them and they get damaged early, or your AC gets damaged early? Yeah, all these things can move around, but this is sort of like taking your best guess at when things will happen and preparing for like those situations where you have them all there, okay? So you can see the relative sizes. And then that other chart at the top shows you your cash flow. It shows you how much money you've saved towards your capital expenses And then when you have big drawdowns, because you have a bunch of expenses, it shows you where your balance is there. And what you want to do is you want to keep this account so that it's above zero, where you don't run out of money. If you run out of money, it just shows you you need to come up with that money from somewhere else. You need to go borrow it. You need to bring it in from an external source, like a different reserve account you've got there. And so you can see how much you save for your expenses and when. And then when your expenses count is at its lowest, or when you're going to be in trouble saving for money. And so these are, this one doesn't even get close to zero until, you know, year 31 when we had that big expense. So we're primarily saving for that period of time. Okay. This allows you to do the planning. And if you do your modeling and you're kind of like, you know, checking your stuff in here and you see that you have a, you didn't save enough, it'll tell you your largest deficit of $78,128 is happening in year 31. And so you could see like where you actually drop below zero on this chart. And then where you have the lowest point on here, if you didn't save enough here, if you're not putting enough in the starting balance or monthly, or getting a high enough return on the money that you do have in there. Okay. So identify the deficits. And that's why the advanced spreadsheet allows you to do the planning for your capital expenses and understand what the expenses are in your rental properties. So here are the advanced instructions, primarily covered already, but you want to research and enter the cost in today's dollars for each expense, the lifespan of how long they expect to last for, the age at the start. So like how many years old it is when you're buying the property, and then include any custom expenses down here, put all the returns in there, and then enter in a combination of how much money you're setting aside at the start as part of your rent ready costs to prepare the property for the things you know it has to have done, and then how much you're saving each month, and then what the return you're getting on the property doing there. And if you have enough, if you're the combination of how much all the expenses are, the starting balance, how much you put aside monthly, and the return you're earning on it, end up where you don't go below zero in that kind of cash flow planning, then it'll show you down here that you have no deficit. If you do have a deficit, you need to increase how much you're saving monthly, how much you're starting with, or the rate of return on your account that you're earning. You need to invest it in something a little bit higher in order to be able to get that. Okay. And then there are overrides for each individual one if you want to adjust all those. And then use these numbers in your deal analysis. So you'd use the one here for the starting balance as your rent ready cost that goes here in the world's greatest deal analysis spreadsheet. And then the annual capital expense money goes right here in CapEx. So those numbers, this is where it transfers. So once you do the maintenance and CapEx estimator for the advanced version, these are where those numbers go. Okay. That's where you enter. So why a starting balance? Well, what if you bought a resale property that you knew needed a roof for the next 2 years? You talked about this as an example, right? You might find it difficult to save enough with cash flow in 2 years to fund a brand new roof purchase. Hard to save up $6,000 a year in cash flow on a property just to pay for the roof. Instead, you could set aside money as a rent-ready cost to initially seed your expense account, knowing that you're going to need a new roof in the next 2 years. Then you use the maintenance and CapEx estimator, rental property advanced spreadsheet, to see how much you need to save monthly to avoid having a deficit with that one and all the other expenses you have. Repeat this for any known upcoming or deferred maintenance you've got there. So it's not just roofs. It's, hey, look, I know I'm at 10 years old on this AC unit. AC units don't last that much longer. I know I need to save up for an AC. How much is it going to cost me if I bought it today? And then set that money aside knowing that you're going to need it. Okay. So your expense account is a combination of the amount you start with and the amount you save up each month minus the expenses you have that are coming up. Now, where do capital expenses show up when we talk about deal analysis? You know, we've seen this real estate, the return on investment quadrants, the return quadrants thing, appreciation, your tendency for property values to increase over time, debt pay down, how much on the loan are you paying down the property, the tax benefits of owning the property, and then the return you're earning on reserves. Plus, there's this cash flow quadrant where you're seeing how much cash flow you're doing. Well, capital expenses show up in cash flow. They are drag on the cash flow of the property. So by having capital expenses on a property, you're not receiving as much cash flow on it. And so this is what gets dragged down when you look at your returns. Okay. But cash flow isn't everything. You still have the property going up in value. You still have the property being paid down in debt. Still have all the tax benefits. And the combination of all four of these primary ones, plus the return you're getting on reserves, is the total amount you're earning on the property. So even if you're looking at your cash flow and you're like, look, you know, when I do all these calculations for CapEx, like you're talking about, James, cash flow is ugly. Yeah, cash flow typically is ugly when you put very little down on a property. It's really hard to get properties to cash flow. You know, you could do other strategies to improve it. We've got a whole module that we did on how to improve cash flow properties. Go look at all those for how to significantly improve cash flow. But when you really calculate in what CapEx is, it really drags down that cash flow return because you know that this asset you own is eventually going to need a new roof. It's eventually going to need new AC. It's eventually going to need a new furnace. And those are large expenses. It's hard to pay for a roof when you're only making $50 a month in positive cash flow on a property. Really hard to pay for a new roof when you're only making $100 a month in cash flow on a property, which is why it's tricky. Because you know you've got roofs and ACs and furnaces and paint and exterior stuff that's going to happen to your property that you need to pay for over time. And so that really drags down on your investment. You need to go into this understanding this and understanding how the returns work. Okay. But cash flow isn't everything. All right. Let's take a look at an example where maybe you're like, okay, I get this. This makes sense to me. I'm upset about it, but I'm going to work through it. What if I bought new construction properties where I didn't have these really old resale properties that are going to have maintenance coming up a lot faster? Let's look at what the difference is. So what I did is I did two different versions of our CapEx spreadsheet. I did the advanced one, and I basically said the same cost for everything. So the roof cost, same thing, windows, AC, all these things have the exact same cost, whether I'm doing new construction or whether I'm doing a five-year resale. But the difference is when I buy new construction, everything is at the beginning of its life cycle. Everything is brand new. So we're expecting to have the full frequency in years before we have to replace our first one. However, with a five-year-old resale property, everything is 5 years old. So if we had to replace air conditioning units every 10 years and we've already got 5 years on it, now we need to save up for an AC in 5 years left. Okay. And the same thing with roofs, kitchens, and windows, and all that other stuff. You only have a certain lifespan for those. And if you bought a property that's 5 years old, they've used up part of that lifespan on you. And now you only have a shorter amount of time to save up for all the things remaining. Okay. So how is this going to affect deal analysis and everything? You can see how the returns change. You know, a lot of these expenses, they shifted forward so that you have these things kind of move forward here. So that shows you like where the expenses are and how big they are. So now for the five-year resale one, you've got expenses coming up really rapidly. Whereas before, you had everything kind of coming out much later here, all right? And certain things get shifted because once something's 5 years old, you kind of like shift the kind of frequency that happens forward because you only have like 2 years left on it, and then it's 5 years from there. So realize that some of these returns are going to look a little bit different based on that, okay? So you can see all the different expenses based on those. And with new construction, if you were saving the default amount we had in the year, then you would not run out of money. But if you save the exact same amount, but you bought a five-year-old property that had stuff that was 5 years old when you bought it, you end up running out of money really soon. You end up running out of money at about year 10, and then also again at year 15, and then basically also again at year 25. And you can see all the different times that you run out of money there. In fact, in year 36, you have a $38,000 deficit. So you're $38,000 short, even though you're literally saving the same amount of money with the new construction property versus the resale property. The difference is when you bought it, it was already 5 years old and you had a lot shorter period of time in order to save up in order to replace stuff. Okay. You need to save an additional $80 per month. That works out to be about, you know, purchasing a property that was $16,000 more, you know, $80 using that kind of like $50 for every 10,000 rule of thumb. So about $80 more per month in order to not have a deficit with the five-year-old resale property. So if we increase the amount that we were saving per month for our capital expenses by $80 per month, then we wouldn't run out of money on this one that was 5 years old. So you can afford to buy a $16,000 more expensive new construction property than a resale property and have it be the same monthly payment. It's another way of saying that, okay? So just realize that these things matter, and buying a resale property has additional expenses that you might not be thinking of compared to a new construction property. All right, as home prices and rent combinations, like the ratio of home price to rent declines, so as it gets worse, maintenance and capital expenses tends to get worse, okay? So comparing less expensive and lower rent properties to higher price and higher rent property, the same hourly rate for trades, we talked about that before, you know, a handyman's gonna cost you $80 an hour or whatever they cost in your marketplace, regardless of whether they're working on a $100,000 property or a $500,000 property. And attorneys, if you have to pay an attorney for an eviction or a dispute of some type, they charge the same hourly rate, whether you have an inexpensive property or very expensive property. They have the same court eviction costs. The cost for an eviction is the same, whether it's a $100,000 property or $500,000 property. It costs the same for you to do a tax return on a $100,000 property in an LLC as it would for a $500,000 property in an LLC. The same cost for all of your asset protection stuff. You know, forming your trusts and maintaining your LLCs and all that other stuff that you're doing and all the other asset protection things that you're doing for those things tend to cost the same for the property. The price of the property, you may have a more expensive insurance, but that's something different. the same cost for materials for many expenses. You know, a box of nails, in order to fix something, is going to cost the same whether you got a $100,000 property or $500,000 property. But you have smaller rents on a less expensive property. So the maintenance and the capital expenses as a percentage of that gross operating income is much higher as compared to the higher priced and higher rent property. And that's why you might see these numbers get skewed. And you might be like, wow, you're using, you know, 20% for your maintenance number on analyzing a deal. Yeah, it's because it's an $80,000 property. And as a percentage of like the $600 in rent, you know, we need to go put new paint and carpet on the property and do repairs and maintain LLCs and do tax returns and all that other stuff. And those are expenses. And so they become a large percentage cost to do that. Whereas on a $500,000 property, you have more percentage-wise, less percentage-wise, I should say. So portfolio planning. So what types of properties do you want in your portfolio? Do you want these newer properties that have more, that you're deferring the maintenance that's likely to come on your properties, or properties that have just been rehabbed, or properties that have just had major components replaced on the properties? Do you want more expensive properties? What do you want in your portfolio? Do you want older properties with higher expenses? Do you want more less expensive properties? Like, do you want to have 10 properties that are $100,000, or do you want to have two properties that are $500,000? Fewer but more expensive properties. Well, you have the loan spots to consider. You only get 10 loans. So if you do 10 $100,000 loans, you still have, you know, once they're even free and clear, you still only have $1 million net worth. But if you have two loan spots and once they're free and clear, now you have still $1 million net worth, but you have two $500,000 properties. So loan spots can matter, and the cost to do the loans, you know, loan expenses. Tax returns, you may have to do a tax return for each of the 10 properties if you separate them out into LLCs, unless you're kind of, you know, moving them up into your own tax return. You're doing just sort of an informational one or whatever you're doing there. Again, not an expert on tax returns, but you might have to do more tax returns if you have separate entities for all these things. Versus if you have two properties, you have each one an LLC, maybe you're only doing two tax returns instead of 10. Asset protection-wise, you may have more expenses for maintaining your asset protection stuff. So the same or similar dollar amount in maintenance and CapEx, but very different percentages of gross operating income and very different kind of like structure of your portfolio versus whether you want to have these very large number of smaller properties or a fewer number of more expensive properties. Now, there's other reasons to consider this too, right? There's the, well, if I have vacancy in one property, then my vacancy is only 10% of my portfolio of 10 properties versus it's 50% if I've got two. Yeah, you have to kind of counteract what this is. Ideally, you want to have 10 $500,000 properties, right? I mean, if you think about it that way, then you have the benefits of both. You have the larger kind of dollar amounts, lower kind of percentage for CapEx maintenance, stuff like that. But then you also have the ability to spread your risk out over the larger number of properties. So plan for whatever makes sense to you, but think this through. I'm not telling you there's a right or wrong answer. It's really whatever you think about and whatever you desire in your portfolio, but have these thoughts. Go ahead and plan it out. Now, can you time maintenance and capital expenses? Can you sell basically where these red arrows are right before you have these other expenses? You know, can you go and say, look, you know, I've had this AC unit for 10 years, probably not going to last that much longer. This roof is about to be due in the next couple of years as well. I'm going to have this major furnace expense and the house is going to need windows. Maybe instead of me paying for all those expenses, maybe I decide to sell the property before I have this pretty big stack of expenses that come up. And you can do it at any stack, right? It doesn't have to be the first one. It can be any one of these large expense stacks. Now realize they don't tend to always cluster exactly around the same time. You know, we're estimating that they will, but you can have a AC fail early or an AC go exceptionally long. Just happen to have a workhorse of an AC unit that normally the lifespan of the AC is, whatever it is, 10 to 15 years. But this one just happened to last 25 years. You're like, this thing is amazing. Can that happen? Sure. But can we try to plan this probabilistically and say, hey, maybe we should sell these properties during these times where we're likely to have these large expenses coming up in the next year, or buy properties after you've had a lot of these large expenses paid for by someone else to sort of get the benefit of what they just did in the property, okay? So think about those things to try to optimize in your deal flow and your kind of like deal analysis as you do this. All right, selling before major expenses. Model it out, you know, do it yourself and kind of see how this all plays out for you. Compare your costs of sale, you know, those, the closing costs, the real estate commission, your depreciation recapture tax, your capital gains tax, to the expenses you have upcoming and see which one you'd rather pay. Is it better for you to have those costs of sale and then re-leverage up and kind of improve your return on equity, which I think we still need to do the return on equity module. Do you learn a lot more about that? But do you want to go and optimize for that? Or do you want to just pay the expenses right now and actually have a property that you've now got all the new stuff on you expect to keep for a while longer? You could sell it traditionally for sale by owner or with a real estate broker. And you may or may not have some vacancy if you do that. So realize, factor that into your calculation. And hot markets, markets where it's in, where the seller is in control, the seller has got the advantage because there's a lot more buyers than there are properties to sell. In those markets, it's easier to sell with upcoming and deferred maintenance. In softer markets, where there are a lot more buyers than there are, I'm sorry, where there are a lot more sellers than there are buyers, a lot more properties on the market and fewer people are wanting them, it is much harder to sell a property with upcoming or deferred maintenance. To realize the market conditions may play into this discussion as well. You could sell it to a tenant buyer, someone who's going to rent it from you, live there for a year, two, or three, and then ultimately buy the property from you. And you could save on real estate commissions and maybe some closing costs, depending on how you structure it that way. Or you could do a 1031 exchange and defer the capital gains and the depreciation recapture taxes till later. It's not like you get rid of them unless you die, but it's not like you get rid of them. You just kind of kick the can down the road and you defer some of those taxes on that. Okay. And by selling it before these expenses, you could also improve your return on equity by re-leveraging up, taking some of the equity you have in the property and redistributing it by buying a larger property or more than one property in order to improve your return on equity calculations, which we will get into a lot of detail when we cover that in the module. All right, buy after the major expenses. So buying a property that just got a new roof, new kitchen remodel, and an AC now saves you and puts you to reset that cycle there for you. The smaller the size of the expense and the lower the frequency, the less it matters. So for things that are really inexpensive, it doesn't matter if it was just done. But big things, it can matter a lot. And if something needs to is really expensive and happens very frequently, that matters most. So some expenses are large in size, but low in frequency, like a $12,000 roof every 20 years. Some expenses are small in size, but high in frequency, like $2,000 for landscaping every 7 years or whatever you're spending on that. Some expenses are medium in size and medium in frequency, like $5,000 exterior paint every 10 years. You can normalize by looking at the cost per year like we do in that basic spreadsheet. But you need to run your own numbers with each property. But for example, a new roof versus a 10-year-old roof, let's look at that. You'd have a $25,000 deficit if you decided to do the new roof at purchase, and we saved enough in order to make that not have any deficit there. Versus you have a 10-year-old roof, you'd have it come down here and you'd have a deficit. So realize that you'd have a deficit if you did this, doing that. The alternative to saving expenses. So we've been talking about, you know, putting money aside for your capital expenses and the importance of saving the money, knowing in advance you're going to need these things coming up. What are the alternatives? Or if you're like, look, James, I'm not doing that. Or I haven't been doing that. I'm kind of in trouble. What do I need to do? I know it's coming up. I was thinking about this, but I wasn't really thinking about it, right? Like, I knew that I had roofs coming up. I knew I got ACs, but I was sort of pretending that I just figured that out when it came there. Well, you could borrow the money for expenses instead of saving for them. You know, you can go and say, I'm just going to go ahead and tap my whatever, my reserves or my credit card or my HELOC or whatever I could do in order to pay for that. But it does add risk, okay? You could borrow from yourself, like your own reserves, pay that back over time. You know, this reduces the reserves you have for your other properties. So you put yourself at risk that something else happens on those that's unexpected. You could borrow from the bank, you go and get an actual loan in order to do this. You can get a home equity line of credit and tap that when you need it. You can get it on your investment properties or to do it if you need it there. You can use a credit card. You can use a cash out refinance of a property or on this property or another property in order to get access to that. But realize you're paying a premium in the form of interest instead of earning a return on the money that you're saving. So, you know, does people think about this differently? I personally think that you should be saving the money, but that's kind of my philosophy in life. So it increases your risk by reducing the reserves you have and or having debt with interest. What about insurance claim? Not every time, but sometimes you get lucky and a roof that's partially through its lifespan will qualify for an insurance claim. You know, a common one where I live is a hail claim. So we'll have a hailstorm come through and a whole bunch of hail will damage roofs in the neighborhood. And so you'll have a roof that was, you know, 12 years old that now has hail damage. The insurance company comes in and they're like, we will pay for a new roof minus your deductibles and stuff like that, as we covered in the insurance module. But now you got, instead of having to pay, you know, $12,000 plus whatever inflation is, you know, in the future for a roof, now you only have to pay $4,000 for your deductible in order to get a new roof, and it's early and it restarts the clock. So sometimes you get lucky. Then you could rerun your spreadsheet, you know, after you've done that, and you could say, look, now I no longer need to be saving $800 a month for my, you know, or whatever it is, whatever your number happens to be. I don't need to save that anymore because now I have a new roof. I can readjust those. Maybe I only need to save, you know, 10% less or whatever it works out to be to calculate that. The same can apply for other expenses as well. You have an accidental fire in your property. You have to redo the kitchen. Insurance claim kind of allows you to do that. Well, now you don't have to worry about a kitchen for however long it takes for that kitchen to become old enough to have to do a new capital improvement in order to do that. Or you could buy a home warranty if you know certain things are coming up. So for example, you know that your AC unit usually only lasts about 10 years. You haven't had a home warranty, like an insurance policy up until this point. Be like, look, I know that I'm going to have a $5,000 new AC cost coming up here in the next couple of years. So why don't I just be smart about this and pay for a home warranty policy now, one that covers my AC unit, knowing that I've got a 10-year-old AC unit and likely in the next year, two, three, four, five, maybe it goes very, very long and I've got a 10-year one, but probably getting a new AC unit out of this thing. And so you can kind of be smart about when you decide to take on home warranties, when you have things that are covered by the home warranty that you then decide to pay for. So you could choose to do that. Realize that the home warranty only covers some expenses. You know, it'll probably cover stuff like your furnace, your AC unit, things like that, appliances in the property. So it could cover things like that, and they're going to try to repair it. But if they go to the thing and they're like, hey, look, I can't repair this thing anymore. It's already 14 years old. You know, at this point, we need to replace it. Then the insurance company will pay out and do that. So make sure you read your policy and understand, but that could be a plan for you to optimize, minimize what your capital expenses are by choosing to take some of your capital expense money and actually use it to pay for a home warranty, knowing that you're playing the odds that you're going to need a new furnace or AC or whatever it is, instead of actually paying for it yourself. You're paying for the insurance policy that will likely give you one or pay for some maintenance on it while you're waiting. Okay. So that's it. So basically, if you need the spreadsheets, I'll provide a link for those that purchase the course, and you'll be able to get those and use those in your thing. But take this maintenance stuff and capital expenses seriously. It's definitely required for deal analysis, and you need to really do it right in order to understand the entire return and how your portfolio is performing. So this has been James Orr. I hope you have a great day, everybody. Bye-bye for now.
With home prices up, mortgage interest rates up, and rents up, but not quite enough to counteract the higher prices and interest rates. Cash flow on rental properties in Odessa is harder than ever. Book a call with the Real Estate Financial Planner to apply our proprietary 88 strategies to improve cash flow on your rentals. See the show notes for a link to schedule your call and improve your cash flow today.
If you're a real estate agent, lender, or professional in Odessa that wants to help our real estate investor listeners, consider reaching out to learn about collaboration opportunities with this podcast. We'd love to add more value to our listeners by having you assist our investors buy, sell, and finance their real estate investments. See the show notes to schedule a call to discuss collaboration opportunities.